Yeah.
Every time I'm back home, people are like, yeah, use Facebook Messenger. I'm like, I hate Facebook.
You have to excuse, I've got a few people at the house right now, so they did promise they were going to leave by 9, but, you know, 4 drinks in, that didn't happen. So...
well...
Player 2 Pixelcast episode 25! I am your host, Tim Henderson. I am very, very grateful that I avoided Sadistic Santa this year. I'm not so grateful that I did not turn my phone onto silent. But I am grateful that it happened this early on where I was still able to, like, joke about it and actually, you know, turn it onto silent now and not have to worry about it. Anyway, I've lost my train of thought now, so I am joined by 2 fine gentlemen this evening, morning, whenever you happen to be listening to this, starting with the captain of the ship, Mr. Huso. How are you?
I'm good, my friend. I'm very good. Ready for the quarter century. It's the quarter century episode of the Player 2 version of this cast.
It's the Christmas Day episode.
Yeah, it is.
Except it'll possibly land on Boxing Day or earlier in the new year, depending on when we decide to go with the schedule.
Yeah. Probably early January, I would guess.
I'm still actually super happy that Sadistic Santa was episode 24. Like, just the way that lines
up. It was nice, wasn't it? It was good. It was serendipitous.
Yes.
Although, whoever got their Sadistic Santa gift didn't really think that. But anyway.
Oh, I listened to that. One person just got a mediocre game like last time.
Yeah.
It was I would have loved a mediocre game.
That's all right. It was a good
since
episode.
Since it predates the Pixelcast branding on this show. Yeah. Like, not only was a game that Huso gave me complete... no kids. It's not
Santa.
Huso, it's actually Santa.
Yep. Don't ruin the illusion,
not
Tim.
Not only was it an absolute garbage fire, but it was like a kind of an amateur hour sexy time garbage fire, so I could not get it out of the way at work or when waiting to pick my girlfriend. Like, I had to use my actual at-home time. When I had access to better things to fucking do it.
And it is forever in your Steam list.
Yep. It is. Like, there's a reason why people want to be able to delete games, as ironic as that sounds. Also, we have a Pixelcast, I guess, appropriately according to this game, Virgin joining us. Sean, how you doing?
Yeah, pretty good.
It's about his third, isn't it?
I avoided the Sadistic Santa once again, though after missing it for 2 years straight and not having experienced it before, I'm pretty sure Huso is going to rope me into it next year and I'm going to run out of excuses on how to get out of it.
I mean, I'm allergic to shit is a pretty good excuse.
Well, doesn't bother
so
Santa.
Far the last 2 years it's been, I've never had enough credit on my... I haven't bought anything on Steam, so I can't, like, you know, be gifted and add friends and whatever. So that's done me all right so far, but he's going to get sick of that same excuse.
You can't get gifts on Steam if you haven't...
Yeah, you've got to have an active account, and they consider active account like some weird, like minor, very minor spend, but it has to be...
Like $5, I think it was.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting. I have not bought... I've activated a couple of keys. I have not bought anything on Steam.
Activations count, though. Because that counts as a money value. So you're in for Sadistic Santa next year. It's good.
Yeah. Yeah, that means I've lost my excuse for next year as well.
That's it. I'm moving to Epic Game Store. Right. Anyway, the tone this episode is going to be somewhat different. We are ringing in a new year, and so we're just going to have our own personal Game of the Year thing. I've done this over the various iterations of the show every time. We're going to be focusing on just 2 games each. Our personal Game of the Year and 1 runner-up. But before that, we'll go with whatever we've been catching up with. There's not a whole lot of new releases at this time of year. So let's start off with... I guess the least spoken of these. Phoenix Point.
Well, Phoenix Matt. Point is actually a new release. So, hey, there you go. It came out last week. It's from...
Possibly a month ago, depending on when we upload this.
Yeah. So it's reasonably new anyway. Late December release. It is a game from the creator of the original XCOM games. So not the Firaxis version of XCOM, which came in the Xbox 360 era. It's from like 94, 95 sort of time frame, way back when I actually first encountered the XCOM brand. So I was very keen for this. As anyone that follows Player 2 knows, I am awfully partial to a bit of XCOM action. And so I was actually a FIG backer on this. It was a Kickstarter campaign to get it going through the Double Fine.
On FIG?
Yeah, it was on FIG, yeah. So as a
man, remember FIG? Still going?
Yeah, still going. Still does quite a bit, actually. Right. Yeah, but it's much more selective on the games that go through a FIG campaign. But anyway, so this is another take on that turn-based combat formula. And anyone that's played XCOM, the recent editions will feel pretty at home, though there is there's some really nice additions that I like, and there's also some kind of potential good ideas, but they never kind of play out like they should. So a lot of the problems people have with XCOM and XCOM 2 is that it's almost a meme at this point, the missing the 90% shot.
Oh my god! For that sole reason, I think I like Rabbids better.
Yeah. So, well, with this, in this instance, you've actually got the option to zoom in your shot. So, and depending on which weapon you're using, it shows you two circles. So it'll show you an inner circle and an outer circle. And so the inner circle is the ideal shot and the outer circle is the possible spread. So it actually adds a visualization to the kind of randomness of the shot, which it immediately makes missing a shot a little bit more understandable.
Is it still possible to miss point blank with a shotgun?
I haven't yet, so I don't think so.
Because that's definitely happened in the past, and I'm like,
yeah, I know. And it's one of those things where a game that's based on essentially dice rolls, you've always got that chance of missing a shot. Whereas in this case, I haven't really come across it yet. Which is it's really nice, and also with that zoom in function, it gives you the option to target enemy limbs or different parts of the body depending on what type of enemy you're facing,
that's cool.
It is very cool, and it's more than just kind of visual cool stuff. It adds an extra layer of strategy to the game, especially with the bigger enemies. With the little enemies, it doesn't really matter so much, just shoot them in the head until they're dead. With the bigger enemies though, because they've got a lot of hit points, like some of these enemies are significant behemoths. So what you want to do is, by crippling a limb, you add bleed damage, and you also affect their abilities in combat. So, for example, so one of the really big enemies, he has a lot of hit points, and he shoots these globs of poison at you. But if you shoot him in the head until his head is considered crippled, he won't be able to shoot the globs at you, and he'll only be able to use melee attacks. But it'll also add bleeding damage. So every limb you cripple adds bleeding damage, and that stacks. So if you can cripple these big enemies, you can cripple their legs so they can't move as far. You can cripple their defenses so they take more damage. But if you cripple multiple limbs, they get stacked bleeding damage. So every turn, they're taking more and more hits. So some of these enemies that seem initially enormously overpowered, if you use this system well, especially if you have a couple of troops shooting at them at the same time, you can whittle them down quite easily by using this bleeding damage and crippled limb system. It's a really nice addition to this kind of game. However, there is a lot of... It's not as polished as XCOM. I mean, and that's kind of
inevitable.
That's expected, This is not 2K and Firaxis making this game. This is a small group of people who's got a guy that worked on XCOM way back when, who kickstarted the game. They got extra money from Epic to make it an exclusive to the Epic Store. But, it's not the same level of polish as XCOM, and going into it, you can't expect there to be. And so there's some rough edges that I think it's probably two or three patches away of being where it almost needs to be to compete with XCOM, but it's very close, and it adds some nice things to the genre that that really interests me. The player creator system isn't as deep as XCOM. You know, a big appeal of XCOM 2 and 1 was the ability to create soldiers, you know, with your friends' names or with your family's names and give them bios and little background things. You can do that in this game, but it's nowhere near as powerful. You can give them a nickname and you've got a basic selection of looks and ammo and armor and stuff you can upgrade, but it's nowhere near as deep as what the XCOM series offers. But it's also a lot cheaper than XCOM was when it came out. You know, this is a $30 game, yeah. $40 game. It's got a massive campaign. The meta game in it is quite interesting, if a little daunting. It's not as clean. XCOM was very easy to know where you were standing at any point in the overall game, not just the mission to mission. You kind of always knew where you stood regarding, you know, threats to how you were playing and the whole alien menace. Whereas this one, it's a lot more vague. There's three factions that you can kind of help in this post-apocalyptic Earth. And these factions will give you access to more weapons and armor and things like that. So it's to your benefit to kind of keep them all happy, but you can never keep them all happy. You know what I mean? Because by keeping one faction happy, you're upsetting the other faction. So it's kind of this [S2] Yep. [S1] This balancing act. So everything becomes a little bit more vague in direction. So it's easy to get lost, I think, in the overall map and things. So it's not as straightforward. There's not a clear end goal in sight when playing, and some people may love that. Honestly, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's kind of a taste thing, I guess. You know,
I think it's probably going to make a niche genre even a bit more niche.
A little bit. It is a little bit, and I think it needs to be. In my personal opinion, as someone that's played ridiculous hours in XCOM, it needs to be clearer. Where you're heading and what your goals are and what you're aiming at. But it's not necessarily a bad game at all. Like, I really want to stress that. This is an excellent and one of the best attempts at the XCOM formula that doesn't have the XCOM brand, to be honest. Like, it really is. It's that everyone and then XCOM sort of situation where the market leader...
Still a Rabbids fan over here.
Oh, yeah, Rabbids is fantastic.
I really enjoyed Rabbids.
I really like Rabbids too, but it doesn't have the depth that XCOM does, and you know, so I think this is close. This is very close. It's a lot rougher, and it's definitely hasn't got the production values and obviously budget that XCOM does. But if you're a fan of the genre, you would get a lot out of this game, I think. And I can see myself playing this essentially until Firaxis get around to announcing XCOM 3. So, yeah.
Which probably will not come out within the next year. So this, I think, is feeling...
Yeah, yeah. It's come out at a good time, I think. And I think they've got a bit of room to, you know, fix little problems here and there with patches and stuff. And, yeah, I think it's got a pretty bright future, actually. So I think fans of the genre are going to really dig it, despite its problems.
I do have a question.
Yeah.
Yes.
How many of the Player 2 crew have you sent to an early grave so far?
Do I have a character?
Not yet, Tim. Well, you haven't recruited you yet.
I'm now officially mad. Do I look mad?
So recruitment, it's actually funny. Recruitment's handled differently in this game than XCOM. In XCOM, you have just like a pool of soldiers in your training facilities that you can hire. Whereas in this game, you've got to get soldiers from the enclaves of these three factions you told about. So if you're not in good standing with an enclave, you don't have access to soldiers from them. So it's a little bit different. It's a little bit harder to get new soldiers. But that being said, I've sent Adam. Adam has gone to an early grave, and Paul has gone to an early grave. But apart from that, I've had a lot of injuries, but no untimely deaths. So
I'm going to look at it the perspective that I'm at least not dead yet.
No, you're not dead yet. Not dead yet.
Also not alive, but that's beside the point.
Well, it's to come. I've got to work out a good nickname for you yet before I can hire you. That's the problem.
Ooh, actually, while I've got this segue lying here, actually, no, it's too spoilery. I'm just going to instead talk about my game, which is I'm going super old school at the moment. I've been crazy busy Like wrapping up a lot of stuff for the year, trying to get some extra article things done. Got a whole bunch of exams, since I am technically a student at the moment as well. I've not had a whole lot of time at home to play games. So having to go with things that will run on a Surface laptop at work. So I've like gradually been chipping my way for the first time in years through Sam and Max Hit the Road. And guess what, guys?
It's great.
That game is still pretty good.
A lot of people always, like, they talked about Full Throttle and they talked about Day of the Tentacle. But for me, it was always Sam and Max.
Day of the Tentacle is also still pretty good. But yeah, Sam and Max was, I think,
Sam and Max was me, yeah.
My favorite game at some point in my earlier lifetime. It's just, it's, I don't know, like, they hit the cartoon style in a way that's kind of 90s, but also timeless.
Yep.
The humor is deranged and psychotic, but never actively nasty. A couple of the puzzles are like rely a little bit on some weird observation, but it's never, it's not Discworld, which is obscure reference. But for people, you know, 20 years younger than me, Discworld is infamously famous for being difficult to the point of unfair.
Discworld 2 was much better, but yeah.
Much better. Maybe not quite as funny, though. That was always a pain. Like, the first Discworld game was hilarious, but my god, that puzzle design. But no, the puzzle design of 7 Max, spot on. Actually really creative in some places. I forgot, like, how weird that game... Like, that game is weird.
Oh, very.
Yeah, the premise for... I have played this before, so I forget that people don't actually know, but you're effectively freelance police.
Yep.
A dog and a psychotic... What is, I guess you would call a psychotic rabbity thing. It's great. Like, you kind of get a phone call. Actually, no, let's actually start with the intro. You rescue a damsel in distress from a crazed psychopath, mad scientist.
Yep.
In just the weirdest way possible. Like, it's intentionally cheesy and, like, kind of taking the piss out of the whole concept. Then you have, like, a little credit sequence where you're, like, kind of driving down the road. And then, like, they walk back into the office and they, like, just take the piss out of the own credit sequence and everything. And eventually, I think Max is like, Sam, either termites are burrowing through my head or one of us is ticking. And then you realize, like, oh, right, this that scientist, you know, he wasn't a guy. He was a robot. And his head is a bomb. I'm like, quick, Max, where should we put this so it doesn't hurt anybody we know or care about? And this next line just kind of sums up what's both wrong and right with the humor in this game. Is Max is just like, out the window, Sam. There's nothing but strangers out there.
Yeah.
So you
I have
that.
To play this game now. I have.
Just you've never played Sam and Max. Oh, it's
no.
And the voice acting, like when this game came out,
it's good. Like there is no such thing as good voice acting in the early 90s.
No.
CD-ROM era.
It was fantastic.
It is on point all the time. The recording quality is actually okay as well, which is nuts.
It came out without voice acting originally, didn't? And then the CD-ROM version came out with the voice acting.
My old copy was a CD, and they made that was a big thing. They would like add little speech bubbles on the thing saying, hey, this actually has voices and stuff. And I grew up playing primarily Sierra games, so like, but this was a league above, easily a league above in terms of voice acting quality. But you're effectively trying to hunt down a missing Bigfoot, and then you kind of run into this whole environmental Bigfoot conspiracy thing, and a girl with a literal neck of a giraffe, and just some weird, like the world's largest ball of twine, like people with bungee jumping out of Mount Rushmore, like their nostrils just straight up.
And the ghost train. I remember the ghost train for some reason at the carnival, because you could play whack-a-mole.
Oh, the Tunnel of Love?
Yeah, the Tunnel of Love. That's it, yes.
It's been with
so long since I've played this game, but yeah.
But that was one of the harder puzzles, but when you figure it out, that's when you realize that Max is actually a part of your inventory.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to short circuit the board. You literally pick him up, dunking in the water, and just shove his head into the circuit board while you're on.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Oh man, but it pulled off some stuff which I'm guessing was quite technical at the time. Like I've just recently gotten past the Mystery Vortex, and like just when you're walking around, like, and it's all affected by magnets underneath, and like your character would just grow and shrink in different sizes, and you have to find said missing magnets and like adjust how you go and shrink to find which door you actually have to get through.
It was super clever, like
but also not too much, because that puzzle could have been maddening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it was always like any time you got an answer in Sam and Max was, and I think this was the key to his success, was it was like, oh yeah, of course, that makes total sense. In this world, that solution makes sense, which is not always the case in these point and click games. A lot of the times there was also, these answers that were super obscure.
No, and when you figured something out, you had like you knew you had figured it out, and it felt so freaking good.
Yeah, yeah.
And like 100%. It even like had multiple pathways where it, like, because it's kind of like a road trip across America theme, although you could literally bounce between LA and New York effectively, like as a video game, you can literally just start anywhere. But like you could, depending on like what you find first or who you speak to first, you could actually open up different locations in different orders, which again for a game from 1993 is madness.
Oh yeah.
No, like, it's so good. Like, it holds up. I can't see why it wouldn't hold up. Yeah, at all.
Having been playing through the last couple of months, again, I mean, take my time, but no, I'm somewhat smitten by the fact that this was one of my favorite games ever. But aside, like, the interface could be a little bit more refined. Mm. But aside, like, it's not difficult. Like, you just have to click a couple more times to get to the right icon.
Yep.
It's still really good. And if it's on sale on GOG or anywhere else you can buy it, I would really, if you want something like kind of wacky, nostalgic, mean, but in an innocent kind of way, in a pure adventure game, like it holds up. It's absolutely fantastic.
It really rode off that Roger Rabbit kind of era where there was kind of this almost adult cartoon thing going on before The Simpsons and before like South Park and things where cartoons
Simpsons
got really
kind of really starting to take off, I think.
Yeah, about the same time. And it
but
kind
it was
of
a different attitude towards it. It was like where like a lot of adults were making things that were adult content, but you couldn't make it as adult content, so you had to make it as something you could sell to kids.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Whereas this is, I just have so many fond memories of it. And using,
I love the fact I brought this game up and Huso's talking about it more than I am.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's, it's such a good game.
Awesome.
It's,
I'm happy to have someone to bounce this up because it is. And Sean's just looking at us going,
what the fuck, you old bastards? What are you doing?
Hey, man, I'm older than you, Huso.
Are you?
So really? I need to actually go back and try this. Like, I have played Day of the Tentacle. I have done Full Throttle. But, I mean, back in the day, like, I never had a PC, well, had a PC that could play some games, but my parents never wanted me to do that because they kept claiming it would bring a virus to the computer. So
I remember that.
Yeah, so I basically stuck to consoles. So there's a lot of good PC games that I have missed out on over the years, but hearing the way you guys are talking about this, I'm going to go look it up once we're done.
It's on GOG.
Anyway,
it's on GOG.
I think that's how I earned it, actually.
Yeah.
Although, speaking of old man, you've been playing Red Dead, Sean.
Yes, I've been thieving, robbing, killing people by the hundreds. It was given to me last Christmas, and I played it for a little bit. Got a little bit bored and put it back in the drawer, and it sort of sat there until a week or two ago when I had actually caught up with the games that I wanted to play. And I'm like, well, what can I go through in my pile of shame? And lo and behold, there was Red Dead. And I'm like, yeah, why not?
Now that the PC version's out and looking extra nice.
Oh, well, I've just got the PS4 version. Yeah. So, but
the
I chucked it in,
like,
loaded it up, and I'm like, crap, what the hell was I doing? What's going on with the story? I can't even remember how to control this thing. So I did what any good gamer would do. I deleted everything and started from the beginning again.
If you made that decision quickly, then you are actually better than a lot of us. Because I spend like 4 hours in denial normally before I'm like, yeah, I just need to
undo
that last 10 hours and just go from scratch.
Oh, it took me about half an hour. Like, I loaded it
up. That's a pretty healthy time, I think, to realize
then
that.
Then I'm like, nah, maybe I'll just try again another day and shut it down. And then I'm like, nah, bugger it. All right, let's open her up and give it a go. And then, you know, died within about 10 minutes because I accidentally punched someone and the cops started chasing
me. There are a lot of systems laid on top of each other in that game.
Oh, yeah.
It is an amazing achievement in game, like, building, I guess. Like, they have put so much into that game. It is ridiculous. But they're missing kind of a bit of fun.
With the benefit of having played at least, you know, the first three chapters before, I sort of had an inkling of what I was like. I had that beginning stage of what I was doing. It wasn't just, you know, fumbling around trying to think. I'm like, all right, so hunting, try and, you know, aim for the head and whatever. I'm not really the sort of person, like, I've still got other games in my pile of shame that I want to get to. So I'm not into going around hunting every single animal and getting those perfect pelts and whatever. I'm just progressing through the storyline.
Yep.
But one thing that actually I was a little bit surprised about was, I remember in my first playthrough around the town of Rhodes, encountering this dude with his traveling circus animals that were really just a bunch of regular animals with, like, you know, painted. Like, you had a dog with spots painted on it, so it was like a leopard and whatever.
And, yeah.
Until the end, one is actually a real lion and it tries to kill you. But anyway, I
still not as good as a tiger quest in Saints Row 3. Shuto knows exactly what I'm talking about. That was
with Hulk Hogan, mind you. You have Hulk Hogan in the car with you, with the tiger.
So if you don't know what we're talking about, it's literally a mission where I think you have to drive around. I think it's like just a minute long, but the entire mission is just you driving with a tiger in the back of your car, trying not to die.
Yeah, yeah. And you have to drive like crazy so the tiger doesn't get upset or something. I don't know. It's
like
ridiculous.
Speed or something with a tiger in the car.
It's fucking stupid, but it's hilarious. Yeah.
All right, back to Redhead.
So anyway, I was like, all right, I know this dude's going to be here somewhere, but I never found him.
Gavin? I've just remembered Gavin.
No, Gavin's still missing. Haven't found Gavin yet.
I never thought of Gavin. I don't think anybody did. I think it was just an annoying voice that was like in each town.
I obviously didn't get far to find Gavin. Like,
there's just some guy outside, like, every bar you go to going, "Have you seen my mate Gavin?"
Oh, no, I didn't. I don't.
Real funny guy he is.
That's probably just his cover story because he's actually stalking you. You just, you know, if he's showing up everywhere you've been. But yeah, it just blew me away that this set of missions that I remember doing, I know I did them and I know where I did them, they just didn't exist in this second playthrough. And I don't know if I'm guessing maybe it was one of the random stranger things and maybe he'll show up at some point further down the track.
That's the first I've ever heard of it, and I did finish that game.
Well, yeah, like maybe there are just certain missions where there are certain conditions that have to be met in order to get them. I don't know. Like, it's just one of those strange things that left me scratching my head going, it should have been there, but I'm well and truly past that area now. And yeah, I've seen no sign of it. But other than that, I'm having fun killing everything I can. I was trying to be the sort of, you know, honorable outlaw, you know, but then it's just so much easier to just, if you see someone, just shoot them and then shoot them, loot them, walk, keep on moving. You know, anybody looks at me the wrong way.
I got a bit more into my role play than you did. So Camp doesn't, I've forgotten his name. Wouldn't Dutch start like chewing you out for like killing too many people and drawing attention? Or?
No. No, nothing happens.
Except you're wanted, and your bounty level goes up.
Well, yeah.
Oh, that will then eventually become a pain in the ass. Although, if you're looting him enough, you'll be able to pay it off again.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, the bit that really upset me, though, I had this beautiful exotic elite level horse that I'd got the bonding up to level 3 because I'd bought it in Saint Denis, and you know, and I'm just on my way to collect, you know, a simple simple debt for Strauss and whatever. All of a sudden, some red dots appear. They pull out a freaking minigun on a wagon. Next thing I know,
a Gatling gun.
Gatling gun just takes me out in seconds. I'm like,
may actually be a punishment for your play style. So.
Yeah.
Maybe. Whistle for my horse. Some random brown horse rocks up. Oh. I look at the name and it says, "This is your standard horse." I'm like, motherfuckers, they killed my horse.
I was going to give you another one, huh?
They killed my horse. And I'd done the good thing and I'd given like $800 to the camp so they'd stop bothering me about giving them cash. So I didn't have the money to go and buy another one.
So you're stuck with a dodgy nag.
I was stuck with the basic bitch after that for a while. But I have got another one now, so I'm quite happy about that.
Yeah, I do remember that game just being at least in some, like, just an incredible feat in, like, world building.
Yep.
But, like, every small crack was so much more pronounced. There's one mission fairly early on where it was it the O'Drury's? O'Leary's were whoever the main opposition gang that you have to beef with.
O'Driscoll's. The O'Driscoll's,
I haven't played this game in 10 months. There's a point where you kind of get caught by them and, like, you're almost dead and you somehow, like, shamble back to camp in, like, a zombie state.
You sneak out of their camp,
like, 2 weeks in your tent recovering. And, like, just as part of the game's, like, rotation, like, if you're not actually, like, you know, bringing meat back and, like, providing for the camp, Dutch will come over and talk to you. I come out of that tent, so I'm literally just barely alive. Like, I've given my life pretty much for this guy. I come out of there, and Dutch comes over to me and goes, "Hey, guy, hey, Arthur, people are talking. You really got to start pulling your weight around here."
I always got the shits because I'd go in, look at the inventory and that in the book, and go, "I've done everything for these slack pricks. No one else has done anything. What are they doing? Sitting there freckle doing nothing. I'm bringing everything in here." And that's when I kind of fell off it, I think. I felt like I was spending way too much time on the secondary systems.
Yeah, leached off a lot.
Mm.
Well, the funny thing is, like, I chucked like $800 in the tin at one point. Yep. And that was midway through chapter 2, I think it was. Might have been. It was just after I'd done the Valentine bank robbery. And up until the end of chapter 4, I didn't chuck anything else in, and no one said shit to me. So I don't know if it was because
$800 had gone a long way.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, it was still at about 820 by the time I finished chapter 4. So it could just be a matter of if the funds are getting low, then they'll start hassling you.
It's not just funds though. It's also like you provide meat.
Your meat for the stew and stuff. Yeah.
Or doing the chores and crap like that.
The running joke, like, all the detail in the world in that game in the stew always just looks like garbage.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. I it's one of those games so every time at this time of year when I go away, because my family lives down the coast, so we usually, like, every Canberran disappear to the coast at some point. I usually take my Xbox or my PlayStation, and I'm kind of at the point I'm tossing up whether do I take my Xbox so I can finish Red Dead, or do I take my PlayStation so I can finish Judgment. So they're it's my big choice at the moment.
I haven't been playing it. I would say Judgment.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning towards Judgment. And I've kind of got this Yakuza bug at the moment, so I feel like Judgment's going to win out, but.
Actually, I want to segue there a little bit and just get your guys' things. What's your stance on next gen? Is there any point in getting both, like, PlayStation and Xbox? Personally,
I feel like this is a natural topic that
we'll probably do at some point. Yeah,
In that case, then I'll just hold my tongue until then.
Yeah. Although it would be a good time, I guess, to segue towards a break in part, so I can go and get my laundry. Hey, behind the scenes, yo.
And my drink's empty, so, you know, it's a good time to go.
Dutch courage. We're back. Shirts are clean. Liquor is in glasses, except for one of us who may just be drinking cola from a can. But that person, who is not me, shall remain unknown. So, you know, you people can guess between the two potential candidates.
Like, anyone's guessing at this point. Anyone that's listened to a piece of cast.
I can't see how red you are. You're just giving yourself away.
Oh, come on. Huso's love for rum is legendary.
I like rum more than Jack Sparrow does, so.
That's a good one. No, yeah, rum is good. You know what else is good? Games.
Video games.
And video games. And despite the general tone this year, like, people feel like there's been no real standouts, like, there hasn't been a... It's actually kind of perfect for our discussion because we're going just deeply personal. I'm not trying to have any sort of, this is the Player 2 game of the year.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
There has been no clear-cut Witcher 3, Breath of the Wild, like, kind of...
God of War.
God of War, tentpole release. But there has been a lot of, if not 10 out of 10 stuff, there's been a crap ton of... There's been a disproportionate number of 9 out of 10s, if we're going to talk numerically.
It's been super high, like... quality this year
without
in the AAA
anything
titles.
Smashing through the ceiling, which I think is inevitable for this point in the generation, because the wow value of what you can do is kind of diminishing at this point, and what is left is probably being saved for the
next
very
year.
End of the generation. So with that in mind, we have a simple rule: two games, winner, runner up. I haven't enforced people to choose different games from each other like I've done in the past, so we may end, very unlikely, but we could have only three games. Huso, what is your first runner-up?
First runner-up.
Your only, I guess, actually.
My only runner-up. Okay, so I talked about it briefly last Player 2 podcast, but it has to be a Plague Tale Innocence. That game just came out of nowhere and surprised the hell out of me. And it was in our Player 2 faux awards that we do. It was my surprise of the year because literally I had... You know, Focus Home aren't known for making... super high quality games. They usually, you know, they've kind of got that kind of B plus sort of game down pat. You know, they're never terrible, but they're never sensational. But this Plague Tale just came out of nowhere, and it reminded me. I mean, the mechanics aren't the same, but it reminded me a lot of Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons. If anyone played that, in its kind of structure and how the game was presented. You were playing Amelia, I think it was Amelia, or something. Anyway, French girl's name starts with A. she was the heir to this barony, and her younger son, Hugo, was out of her life. He was always sick, and her mother was always looking after him. And, then all of a sudden the Templars turn up at your estate and start, you know, killing people, as the Templars seem to do. And the Spanish Inquisition were involved at some point. It's a very Da Vinci Code almost story set in 14th century France. But then there's this added wrinkle of the Black Plague is actually going on at this point in time. So...
Delightful period of history.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good time to be alive, folks. And they've utilized all of these elements in puzzles in such a creative way, and added it with a thoroughly engaging story. You know, there's bits of occult, there's bits of, you know, church dogma, and all this sort of stuff that makes a fascinating story. And then adding these rats and different environmental factors in as puzzle elements, it created a game that was... I don't think I've played a game that has been put together so well, especially one that involves what's essentially a whole game as a companion quest. You know, most people go, oh, companion quests, they're fucking terrible. Because usually they are, but in this case, it's not the case at all. So you use... Hugo, I'm trying not to spoil it because the story is so important to this game, but Hugo has some measure of control over the rats later in the game, and that becomes a really important element and gruesome element in the game, in that, you know, light keeps the rats away, but if you can remove a light source from the area using your different abilities, all of a sudden guards are free game for the swarms of rats. And
ooh, that's kind
of
cool.
It is very cool. And how they
incredibly fucked up, actually.
Oh, it is 100% fucked up. Like, you see the arm holding out of this pile of rats as they consume the body, sort of shit. It's a little bit disturbing. But put together in such a way that I very rarely do I play a game, because a lot of the time I take review games that no one else seems to be interested in. Just that's the job of the editor, because, you know, that's what we do. The sacrifices we make. But
if you had more money, I'm sure, Pete, if you offered me a couple hundred bucks to cover it, I'd
probably... Oh, 100%. Yeah, for sure. but in this case, I played it and I couldn't stop playing it. It's one of those games. It's about, I guess, 8 to probably 10 hours long.
It's perfect length.
Perfect length for a story. And I would probably not play it again, but that 8 to 10 hours was some of the best story and puzzle gameplay I have come across in ever. I think it was fantastic. There's very few rough edges, the occasional graphical glitch. I had one instance where I got stuck in a wall, but honestly, it was just so good, and I want to yell from the treetops that people aren't playing this game. You need to play this game. It is fantastic. Really, really good.
You are
game.
Passionate about games tonight, Hugh, so.
Yeah, very, very. But it's a good game. Play it. Go and play it. It's on special on Steam at the moment, but it probably won't be by the time you get this.
Or maybe it will be again. Maybe
End of year sales, you know, who knows. But it is fantastic, and whatever system you play it.
Wow, I'm really curious about your number one now, because you were very passionate about your runner-up. Sean?
Oh, look, man, it was very difficult to pick just which one would be my number one and which one's going to be the runner-up. But for reasons that I'll get into later.
Kind of year, actually.
My runner-up is going to be Fire Emblem Three Houses. Now, I had never actually...
We have a situation... My runner-up is also Fire Emblem.
God damn it.
Maxing out of 5 games.
It's been sitting in the chat there where you can see it the entire time.
I thought that was your list of stuff that you were playing right now. Oh, that Yelena's your game of the year. Okay, I'm not going to say that out loud yet.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you've got it like right below Red Dead Redemption 2. I thought like, oh, you're playing some other stuff as well. All right. Oh,
I don't know. I saw those ones up there and thought, okay. Anyway, moving on.
Sam & Max cannot be my game of the year.
It can always be a game of the year. Sam & Max.
Remember, I have never played it. So to me, it could have been one of those indie games that flew under my radar that I hadn't seen. You know, it's very plausible.
You just said you are older than Hugh, so there is no way that you were alive in 1993, 94 and did not know Sam & Max hit the road if you played games.
Hey, man, I didn't play many PC games. I was Nintendo, Super Nintendo, 64, PlayStation.
Somehow played Day of the Tentacle, Handful of Throttle. I do not believe this any bit. Anyway, yes, how good are Three Houses?
So, I hadn't really played any Fire Emblem before. And
me neither. I'm noticing a theme here.
I had only... I'd seen a couple of the Player 2 guys raving about it on Twitter, so I'm like, oh, okay, everyone here tends to know their stuff a bit better than I do, so I'll give it a crack, and it had me hooked. It absolutely had me hooked. I don't know how much of the storyline you want me to go into here. I mean, I can leave some of it for you, I suppose.
We keep the story stuff light, but I mean, part of the genius game is like, there is something like, Even for the first half, but something happens, which I think has been released in trailers, but I would still like to keep that vague for people who have somehow avoided knowing. But there it comes. So you choose one of three factions.
Yeah,
you effectively show up in an academy and you've made a teacher, and you choose one of three quote unquote houses, i.e., Gryffindor, Hufflepuff, fucking whatever.
Yeah. Is there a.
But there's a point, there is a distinct tear in the story where all three, like any one of those three that you chose, has got to go in a drastically different direction.
Well, that's the thing. I didn't know that was coming. So when it first happened...
I did, thanks to one of my podcast co-people. Thanks a lot. I'm just going to guess it was Paul. Fuck off, Paul.
Yeah, it's probably Paul. Blame that guy. He's a dick anyway.
So when it happened, I lost one or two very strong characters that I'd been carefully cultivating and putting the time in. I was pissed off. I was so angry, and it just goes to show how well the world was built, that I cared about these people, these characters.
This game is so good.
Like, it just, yeah, it's weird that how much it sucked me in, to the point where as soon as I did finish playing it, I, rather than chucking it in the drawer for a later date, I just started up a whole another game, picked a whole new house.
It's also worth noting, this is like a 60-hour game.
Yes.
So playing it again is like...
commitment.
You know, it's not like I really enjoyed that 5-hour campaign.
I'll go and see what the bad guy campaign is.
But I did start it. Then I think Huso hit me up with a review and I ended up putting it on the back burner. So, and it's been sitting there ever since. But yeah, it's always good be going in with the strategies, planning out exactly what you're going to do. And with your students, you know, they're not permanently locked into any one role. This person doesn't have to be a white mage. This person doesn't have to be
the way they come up with them really clever little ways to just like make you aware of stuff. Like the students straight up approach you and say, "Hey, I'm good. I like keeping my distance. I'm not very strong. I don't know how I feel about riding horses, but if I could focus on the bow and arrow more."
Mm.
And then you get to make the call as to whether or not they become like a sniper or like a horseback archer.
Yeah.
Or you get the ones that are like, in that direction.
I love to bludgeon people to death with an axe, you know?
I don't think anybody came to me and said that. Who did you play as?
Like, it does, there's a lot to be said of the fact that you're essentially using child soldiers. And that's you know, a touchy subject.
It's also incredibly anime.
Hey?
It is very anime.
Mm.
Although, to be fair, despite what a lot of anime fans would like to think, it is also a political issue in a lot of anime.
Exactly.
It does get raised.
So, for me, I didn't play it with the permadeath on. Maybe that's cheating, maybe not. I decided, screw it, it's the first time I've played one of these anyway, and I'm probably going to suck at it and have a lot of people die.
I'm going to say a word that got tisked in Sam Exit the Road. Ditto.
Ditto, yep. Ditto, Max.
Ditto. No, it was Conroy Bumpus' psychic who said that. We're getting multi-layers into... people cannot see this because we don't even got the video, but Huso is like gradually turning into a cartoon character at the moment. His face is incredibly animated.
Oh, really?
But yeah, I mean, actually, this game is incredibly anime. And it's... it's actually... because a lot of the stuff that would normally, and it actually does matter to me, that kind of gets overlooked, is like I am very big on atmosphere, visual design to a certain degree, or design. This is not a very interesting looking game, nor is it a technical masterpiece. I mean, you could be running around a part of this academy that frankly looks like it could be running on a Dreamcast if it was running at a lower resolution, and it will still have slowdown. For real, like, it just, like, you've got, like, just a repeated kind of wall texture of, like, a church wall and some kind of smooshy grass and you running there. And it will slow down. And the visual design looks like the character design is all very unique, but it's also, like, somebody got a bunch of how to draw manga books and mastered them perfectly but never developed their own style.
Yep.
So it looks as generic anime fantasy as possible. This game has no visual identity. Which just says so much more about how fucking good the writing is.
Mm.
It's just like it hangs on that. Like the strategy, I guess, is also good, but like sorry, I'm swallowing and I'm blanking.
It's the writing that drew me in and kept me playing. Like once I got that and started playing, I just smashed through it. Like, there was no other game that I was playing at the time. And it was, you know, it was the overall story that kept up. Like, yeah, with your battles, a lot of them, as soon as you know what you're doing, a lot of them are very samey-samey. There's not too many times they
mix it up. It's still fun to execute on, like...
Oh, definitely.
Even without the writing, it still would have been, like, a very solid game.
It would have. And, like, it got to the point for me where... most of the time, I just have my guys would go in and just be annihilating everything. And it wasn't until sort of the final the final fight that I actually
had. It does
had
throw some curveballs at you sometimes, like, because you get overconfident, and then, if you had permadeath on, this would legitimately feel unfair. Sometimes, like, a character will be able to do something that you're versing is like, oh, shit.
That wasn't supposed to happen.
Which is realistic for warfare, I guess, but man, from a game balance perspective, is a little bit off.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that's my runner-up.
All right, so for two of us, our Fire Emblem carries are pretty... We're both pretty impressed. I am seriously considering starting another playthrough. My problem is I don't know if I can commit to another 60 hours when there is already so much stuff that I'm backburnering. Anyway, that's two of us out of the road in one hit. So, Huso, what is your actual favorite game of the year?
This could probably catch some of you guys with this one too, but I don't know if you played it, but it was Control. It's Control. It was...
I super want to play Control.
It was just pitch perfect. Like, I was already a Remedy fan. I was a Quantum Break apologist. I love Alan Wake. I love Max Payne. So, I mean, this was a studio that was going to make a game that I liked. It was pretty obvious. I wasn't prepared for how much I liked it. It is weird in the right ways. The story is captivating. It's like the best episodes of X-Files all jammed into a video game, and I absolutely adored how they put this together. And it was backed up by gameplay that was rock solid. Like, Remedy have never... Like, since Max Payne, it's kind of... been funny. Max Payne was so combat focused. They haven't mastered combat since Max Payne, and they kind of were back on track with this. Everything just felt right. Quantum Break felt a little bit off to me. It wasn't bad at all, and I enjoyed my time with it, but the combat kind of just felt a little off, whereas this just feels bang on. Even though it's a really big wall when you start the game, you're kind of thrown into this world. You don't know what's going on. There's a lot of tough enemies around you that there's no real explanation as to why they're tough. But that wall, it never feels insurmountable. And once you kind of get your head around what the game's doing, it just feels natural. And everything in the game is just buffed to a shine, and there's so much to find in this game. I've never been the type of gamer to go and find all the you know, the little audio clips or the letters, or, you know, you find in all of them. Ever since Bioshock came out, everything's got, you know, audio clips about what's going on. I've never been one for that stuff. I had to find everything in Control. I had to know what was going on in this world, and I had to know everything about it. I just adore how they've built this whole world and how they've linked it with that. Like, it's no surprise, because they've teased it pretty heavily on social media, but there are links to Alan Wake in Control.
Isn't there straight up an Alan Wake logo in one of the DLC announcements?
Yeah, the DLC's got Alan Wake in the logo. So that's the second lot of DLC, which they haven't got a release date for. But, like, there's a lot of stuff in-game that links to Alan Wake. And it was, like, pure fanboy nerdiness when I found this stuff, you know. I was like, holy shit, that's Alan Wake! Yelling out. And I haven't done that in a game forever, you know. And I just was excited to find this stuff and to play through this really cool combat where you mix gunplay with your special powers, and focusing on one or the other is a quick way to die. You have to mix the two, otherwise you're in strife. It's just so good. I really, really adored Control, and I'm very disappointed that it didn't sell as well as it should have, and I hope that it doing well in end of year awards season.
I thought it sold okay, at least.
It sold okay, but it didn't sell like Death Stranding level or Call of Duty level, and that kind of upsets me a little bit, because this is a game that should be selling that well, and Remedy, for an independent studio with you know, that secure their own finances and all that to make a game of this quality. It just, in this day and age, it astounds me. It really does. So
yeah, that cannot be understated, actually.
That like, honestly, is the biggest point here. Like, this is a fully independent studio that's created this without any major backing from a publisher. They've made this game, and it's just amazing. Honestly, go and buy Control. It is my favorite game of the year, and I don't know many people that have played it that wouldn't put it in at least their top three. So I've never heard anyone that's played Control and gone, geez, that was shit. So get it.
Maybe day one PS4 players.
Yeah.
Base PS4, I think that thing has a major frame rate issues at first.
I think they've fixed that now. I played it on the X. Yeah, it
took about a week, I think.
And it was butter. And apparently the PC version's even better. I played the PC version at PAX with the RTX fancy graphic cards. And holy shit, I really want an RTX graphic card after playing that. So
yeah, lighting...
Lighting's a big issue in this game.
I'm going to get to that when it comes to my game of the year, actually. But
yeah,
I'm going to be nice. Or not nice. Maybe I'm just shy. And let Sean go before me.
Are you sure? Because I don't want to end up stealing the thunder
again. I highly doubt we'll finish again. Go on.
Because Tim's going to pick Shenmue 3. It's ridiculous.
I heard he loved that game. So, my game of the year, and it's... a lot of it has to do with just being a fanboy, but Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order.
I knew that once I figured out what your random list in the chat meant.
Now, it is...
It's really just as well, because I was like, maybe I can pick something a bit more recent. I know we've had a few people talk about Jedi Fallen Order. I'll ask you to talk about Red Dead in the beginning. But yes, go on. Why is Jedi Fallen Order your game of the year?
All right. So I've always been major Star Wars nerd. I loved the old school KOTORs, the Dark Forces and the Jedi Knight series of old, and playing through them. And it was just, you know, it's been such a bummer that we haven't seen a good Star Wars game in such a long time. You know, to be able to jump in there and, you know, almost from the get-go, you've got access to the lightsaber. You've got, you know, rudimentary force powers, but you've got them there. You're able to do stuff from the very beginning, and just, you know, feel like a Jedi, especially when you put it onto story mode. So it's very, the combat is extremely forgiving, because I'm in no way the sort of person that plays Dark Souls games, and I just don't have the patience, and I can't afford to buy another controller if I throw it against the wall. So, you know, just, I love the game. It takes the universe and gives you a whole new way to experience it. Yes, it does tie into the overall events that, you know, have occurred within the lore. They slot in nicely. And the ending makes it, they leave the potential there for more to happen.
Good ending. Really good ending. Loved the ending. Yeah.
It took me a little bit by surprise when I saw that ending, and because I was pretty sure I knew what was going to happen, and then to see that, you know, and have the potential there for a sequel, is awesome. I think the way they managed to work the force powers into the puzzles and the environmental puzzles, so, you know, that necessitated the backtracking backwards and forwards, it basically kept me thinking about what was going on and the specific environment. I think it was a bit too linear overall. Rather than, like, when they were first talking about it and they're talking about, you know, jumping between the planets and going backwards and forwards, I thought there'd be...
And it seemed more... like Metroidvania-ish.
There is a lot of that there.
It's more just if you want to be... A lot of it seems to be more the for the completionists. Like, okay, you've got this new force power now. Now you can go back to that point and access that little thing and find that little collectible. you know, it wasn't a matter of, for the most part, where you'd encounter a dead end and not be able to progress further into the world until you go back to, until you get some, get another power later on down the track, and then you're like, oh yeah, now I can do that. That being said, I will say to people, do not go to Dathomir early in the game.
Because yeah, I made that mistake. I did that, but there's a point where you can't get past anyway. So I did that as my first stop when you get access to Dathomir, and severely got my ass handed to me, and I'm like, oh, fuck, here's another Souls game I'm going to throw in the bin and not play. but it's not the case. So, yeah, move past that. I did enjoy it a lot. I thought it was good, but I think a lot of Dark Souls players really didn't, because it's not as precise or kind of the thing with Dark Souls games and Bloodborne, and it's all about the precision in the combat. And I don't think the combat system in Fallen Order is up to that standard. So I think it put off people that enjoyed Dark Souls. But for people like me that didn't enjoy Dark Souls and always bounced off it, I enjoyed it a lot. So.
Wait, so we've got... I'm trying to get him on the show. So we've got David Milner, former editor of Game Informer.
He liked it. Yeah,
before, because he is simultaneously the biggest Dark Souls fanboy and the biggest Star Wars nerd on the face of the planet.
Yep.
So that's the official seal of approval then. Like, if both worlds collide there.
Yeah, he enjoyed it a lot, but I think a lot of those real hardcore Dark Souls players bounce, because the combat's not as precise as what Dark Souls.
Like, Dark Souls is a very successful niche, but it is still a niche beyond what Star Wars can get away with.
Yeah, exactly. So Star Wars has to cater to more people than that, because it's Star Wars, you know, it has to compete.
It's motherfucking Star Wars.
Yeah, it has to cater to everyone, and I think it does a pretty good job of that, actually. It's not a perfect game for me, but yeah.
Things, it doesn't actually really even good. Need to be. The thing that gets me about this, and it's been going on for a while, is like, all they need to do is like make a solid, it doesn't have to be a 5-star game, if they can make a 4-star Star Wars game.
Yep, and that's exactly
they
what
they can
this
just
is.
Not fuck it up and make a 4-star single player story. Story's important to Star Wars fans.
Yeah.
Story focused Star Wars game, that's all EA needs to do, and it took them this fucking long to do it.
And it took Respawn. God bless Respawn.
Yeah, Respawn's pretty good.
Yeah,
Titanfall 2 campaign, by the way, is, you know, I think you're on PlayStation Plus now. Stop complaining that the game was on sale for $10 Australian. Just play the fucking thing. It's really good.
Cause and Effect is still the best first-person shooter level ever.
Oh, that was
awesome. Hands down. It is amazing. But yeah, play Titanfall. Sorry, Sean.
I completely agree. I've re-downloaded Titanfall, you know, because it's gone on PS Plus. So I'm very happy about that. And it's
Titanfall 2 is a game of the year for 2019.
Yeah. Oh, mate, definitely.
I'd support that.
My endorsement. So yeah, but you know, for me, it was a Star Wars game. It wasn't shit. The storyline wasn't shit, and
that's
I could.
That's all it takes for something.
I could butt
like,
mash
we're in
my
such
legs
a starved situation.
Yeah,
there were basically the only times I really for most of it I played it on the just on the regular difficulty level, and you know would die every so often, but overall wasn't too bad. However, the difficulty spikes when you take on the second sister. They pissed me off, you know. There's another one of the Inquisitors later down the track. I managed to take her out on my third try with no problems. But the second sister, both times, I had to drop it down to story mode just to get past it because I was getting the shits and about to turn the game off.
Managed to get through on
how that makes
normal
you feel.
Difficulty.
Does it actually like pop up a menu after you fail a couple of times saying, maybe this is too much for you. You want to drop the difficulty down?
No,
it doesn't do that.
It just gives you, reload and, you know.
The last battle, I played it all through on just normal difficulty. So that was one above story, whatever it was. Jedi Knight, I think it was called.
Yeah.
The last battle, it pushed me to the point of raging, but I got there in the end. And I always found, like, I'd have a kind of brain moment where I'd realize, okay, maybe I should try something a little bit different, and that worked out for me, which I find satisfying, and I think that's the hook of Dark Souls. You know, instead of keep doing the same thing, what do they say, the definition of insanity? You try something a little bit different and mix it up, use different powers, whatever, and that kind of got me around any of the roadblocks that I came across. So that was almost like a plus for me. You know,
it I would was suggest that, a slightly better game design would have you gotten into that headspace a little bit earlier.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's not perfect, and you probably could have had a little bit of, I guess, you know, indication that that's the route you should have taken, but... you know,
this is why Bayonetta 2 is better than Bayonetta 1.
Oh, Bayonetta 2 is heaps better than 1. I don't care anyone says that. I'm with you, Tim.
Bayonetta 2 is really fucking good. Bayonetta 1 is very good, but it's not what Jaikal says it is. Just because we're name-calling people at the moment.
Yeah, yeah, let's call him out. But yeah, I agree with you, Sean. It was a very good game. And super Star Wars coolness. And we've been so starved for it. God. Honestly,
I still find it a little weird that they felt the need to, like, because this clearly could have used, like, just even like a few more weeks. Like, it seems, and like, I don't think it matters. I guess, I mean, whatever. I don't work in marketing. I don't actually know. But part of me is like, surely either side of the movie release would work to ride the wave.
You'd think so, wouldn't you?
Mm.
Like, but with the movie, they could have, like, delayed it a month, and it still would have sold gangbusters.
If they had delayed it, they might have fixed up those sliding bits to make the controls a little bit better.
Sliding bits are the consistent complaint I have seen everywhere.
Sliding bits suck.
Oh yes, but yes,
and they could be so cool. Like, that's a that should be like a short little blaster feeling like a badass.
Yep. Mm. Yep. Yep. Yep.
Anyway, yeah, Huso knows me too well. I think with the except, like, it's weird now because I have had a solid top three games of the generation. But I'm happy, I'm relieved. I have a lot of thoughts on this, but yeah, Shenmue 3 is quite comfortably my game of the year.
You and no one else.
Me and some other Shenmue fans. But I mean, I there is a lot to unpack here, and there is a piece that I'll probably be right unpacking it, because it straight up is Shenmue for the most part. And I do say for the most part, like, it's breaking my heart that I'm aware that I'm not going to be able to finish it before the winter vacation, during which I'll be traveling, and I don't think it would be a good idea to take my PS4 with me. So that thing's gotta stay at home. The Switch can travel. The PS4 can stay. I recently got to the second area, and I haven't had a whole lot of time since then, which sucks. So, as far as I can tell, the game is in two halves. The first half takes part in Bailu Village, which is like a small rural Chinese community, martial arts town appropriately for the theme. And then you kind of move to a larger port city. And I had a moment where early on in it, I was like, all right, I got to start asking people about, do they know about this place? Do they know about that person? Which is a very, very Shenmue thing. And I walked past the person, and I'm like, I can't speak to them.
Mm.
And I turned around and I followed them, and like the talk icon was just not coming. And like, one of the key things with Shenmue is, like, clearly you're never going to say ask the same question to every single person in the game. That's ridiculous. But the simple fact that you can is so fucking huge to, like, making that game real. And taking that away... Wow, I'm starting on a really negative point for what I'm saying.
You are, aren't you? You're trying to tell us this is the game of the year.
Taking that away is that... So... I think the game is kind of... Shenmue is, like, a super niche title with a really hardcore fan base. As I said in the piece that is on the website, and I think maybe my favorite line in it, which is like, there are changes that they could have made that would have made it more liked, but it would have made it liked less.
Mm.
The problem is, for that game that is super liked, they need a shit ton of money.
Yep.
And the most successful Kickstarter in video games history is not enough of a shit ton of money.
Well, there's Star Citizen.
Well, if Star you Citizen, can't... Star Citizen's money, I guess, like, we're talking on the money that came on Kickstarter, but yes.
Yeah.
Star Citizen's budget would probably have made the Shenmue 3 of my dreams.
Yes, I think that would have made most games of most people's dreams. Also, except Shenmue for Star Citizen fans.
So, I think because of, like, the way I'm thinking about it, I have to write about this, I actually do have to look at the negative, which is why I'm getting... So, it's things like, I went into a vending machine and it brought up a menu. And it's like, and it's like, no, like, part of the core of this game is, like, everything that you do, Ryo touches. Like, the first two games were so committed.
Yep.
For better and worse. Like, I fucking love... But, actually, you know what? I'm going to say better. Like, I also think that... I haven't played it yet, but Death Stranding, the Player 2 review, is incredibly negative. Maybe the most negative review out there. It also really...
No, it wasn't. We didn't cop half the flack that a few other outlets did. But anyway.
No, IGN... copped a lot of flack, but their review was still actually more positive than the Player 2 one.
Power Up and Survivor got hammered. They went to town on that thing, but anyway.
Yeah. The point is, like, it's, like, clearly hated, but, like, a lot of the reason it's hated, like, it's... I guess the older I get, the more a game divides people, I find it a lot more interesting than the one that, like, hits the lowest common denominator and everyone's like, 5 stars!
Yeah, yeah.
9 out of 10!
It makes it interesting, you know?
And it means that if it clicks for you, it's really going to click for you. I do think a huge... Like, this game has not sold very well, and we've got a very interesting, awkward road to Shenmue 4. If it ever happens, and it's... Shenmue 3 seems... Like, in its pacing, Shenmue is inherently a slow-paced game. Mm. Even by Shenmue's standards, Shenmue 3 starts off really slow-paced, which is great for the fans.
Yeah.
Incredibly ballsy. And supremely arrogant.
Mm.
Like, yeah, you got the Kickstarter money, but, like, how many more... Like, you have... Like, your fervent fan base have already bought this game.
Yep. How are you going to sell it any further? I think a more popular Shenmue is Yakuza, right?
Yeah, I mean, but, you like, again, as I said in the feature, I think they're actually... Despite the clear similarity of the roles, like, Yakuza's...
Oh, yeah.
It really, like, just... Totally, and it's great. It, like, owns its video game nature. It, like, just yep. goes all in. Shenmue goes in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
With a couple of exceptions, like the wood chopping job in this. Like, part of the thing in this is you actually have to make money to survive.
Yeah.
And, like, each day goes by and it's got the pace. And the wood chopping is weird because, like, the person you're chopping for, and there are multiple instances you can do it, will stand there, like, doing, like, victory dances and shit as you're going. And if you, like, get a good chop in, it will start playing music for, I think, Afterburner. So it'll start with this kind of peaceful, foresty music. And then, like, the 80s synth arcade music will start going down. And it's actually really awesome. It's also a little bit out of character, but I don't care because it's fine. It's great, but it has a huge pacing problem. Not from what Shenmue is, but, like, you need to attract people's attention early on. Like, you are selling. Like, it's so blissfully unaware that it needs to sell itself that I think it's awesome. And I love it, but I'm also, like, a little bit upset because Shenmue 3, you really could have done more to try and get some more people's attention. But most of the things I don't like about it are budget restrained. I like just... They're budget problems, and, like, I can look past them. It has not built on what Shenmue is, but it is Shenmue, and that is something I was incredibly scared about because Shenmue came out. It actually did pretty well for a Dreamcast game. It sold over 1 million copies, not enough to make back its budget because at the time where it came out, it was the most expensive game ever made, which is stupid for what was always going to be a niche title.
Mm.
I mean, I'm glad it exists, but it was not a financially smart move on Sega's part. Oh, and then Grand Theft Auto.
Seem to be a lot of those.
Yeah. Grand Theft Auto 3 came out, which is a game I actually don't like at all, putting me again in a niche market. And Grand Theft Auto 3, the game where you cannot talk to a single NPC, they are all frequently repeated character models. There is nothing personality-wise there going on that drives me at all. So Shenmue 3 comes out, and it just doesn't have the money to, like, build on itself. Like, the main city when you get there is, like, they should, like, it was understandable in the Dreamcast. It's not as understandable now that there are not that many people walking around.
Yep.
But the core gameplay is, like, uncompromised. Like, it's not trying to ape open world games. And for that reason, I freaking love it. Like, it is still, investigating it, still the combat system could really use some work, but it is still like has that kind of like martial arts cultural focus to it. And the world itself looks beautiful. They should cap that fucking frame rate. I'm playing on Pro, and it, as far as the Retroworks, the Digital Foundry frame analysis, and it doesn't ever seem to drop below 40, but it never really seems to get to 60 either.
Yeah.
So if they cap that fucker to 30, it would probably actually look smoother, and they could like improve the draw distance or something as well at the same time. But I mean, it's a Shenmue game. It's a Shenmue game that somehow exists in 2019.
Which in itself is hard, though. Like, it's not a series that's ever going to get new fans. That's the thing, isn't it? Like, Shenmue, by its nature, is never going to get new fans.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that is part of my issue. Like, actually, the opening is also a little choppy. I think there probably is a road to get new fans, and I don't know what that is, but it's not what they've made.
Yeah.
And they've made some weird decisions. I need to trace it down. I think there was an interview with the English voice actor for Ryo, who was like saying he was literally instructed to act like he did in Shenmue 1. He's like, yeah, you know, I've learned and I've grown as an actor.
Yeah.
Now, I played the Japanese dub, and that actually helps a lot. Well, Sorry, go on.
No, I was just thinking, like, you know, Yakuza had these struggles. And I know we're coming back to Yakuza again, but it seems to be the closest link you can get to Shenmue. This is,
on one hand, they're complete opposites, but it is also the most similar game out there.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But it had its struggles in the West, especially. But they've kind of realized that if they put the effort in, there's money to be made, you know what I mean? Mm. Like with Kiwami and Kiwami 2 and that. Do you ever think Shenmue is going to get to that point where they realize if we put the effort in and actually, you know... It's
at such an awkward point now, because part of it is Yu Suzuki needs to catch up with modern game design.
Yeah.
But also, I kind of respect that he's not paid... Like, David Lynch, I think, doesn't actually watch a whole lot of movies and just does his own thing. And that works. And I'm like, because I've already said I'm super happy that this is not being greatly influenced by modern, quote unquote, open world games, because I think that would ruin what Shenmue is.
Yep.
And like finding that middle ground, but they're in this. So, actually, the one example is something that should have been like the QTEs are terrible. No. I'll straight up say the QTEs are bad in this game. And I mean, whatever. Like, this is the franchise that effectively invented them, and like the timing window is super unforgiving. There is no, even less so than the originals, there is no fucking, if you fail this, then there's a chance to catch it up, and it's just like play it back again and then you eventually memorize it, and that's kind of like how you go. So I don't really know the road to getting more people, but like at least a part of it just needs more money.
Yeah.
The problem now, as it stands, is because Shenmue 3 is like almost so uncompromising, which is again part of why I think this is actually my game of the year, is why Shenmue 4 may never actually get a chance to happen. Yeah. Or if it does, it's going to be stuck in a weird vortex, because how do you convince them to give you more money to make the next one to like actually fix the things that would probably bring more people in?
Yep.
When the sales figures for this one outside of the Kickstarter have been okay,
not great.
Like I said, okay. I'm going for a tone of voice here, and I'm like moving my head, which I guess doesn't really work on a podcast.
Yeah.
But I mean, at the same time, like, fucking hell, it's like it's this game where like it's broken down by daily structures, and like, it's all the stuff in between. It's like still there. Like you actually do. Like you go into. Like I walk around religious. I only run when I think it's logical to run, and like you do actually get better at martial arts when you train. You do actually, you know, time goes by at a sensible pace. Like it doesn't just hit the highlights. It still is a game that like you can still talk to a shitload of people. I should like specify that.
Yeah.
Like I was bummed when it couldn't happen, but like it's because I've been built into my idea that you should be able to speak to every single person, even if it's a garbage conversation. Although, now that my brain's all over the place, this 14% beer is not helping. Sammy Claus Schwartz, game of the year.
And only Jason Ims of our listeners will understand that at all.
No, yep. Possibly know what it is. It's really good. But, I mean, like, it's still, like, all of that is still there. Like, it is still about actually training. It is still about walking around town and, like, slowly immersing yourself in there. I don't like that so much stuff has been reduced to menus. Like, again, like I said, in the player two piece, like, so much of what made Shenmue was, like, the simple fact that your character would literally just interact with everything. I mean, it's a small thing, and it's gonna, the same with Red Dead Redemption 2. It'll piss some people off, but the people it clicks with,
it'll click really.
It will click with, but it's something that requires budget, and like that. I'm like one like this is it is so good. On one hand, it is so fucking good. Like it is so nice to like actually be able to like take my time and like I'm just gonna walk into town this day. I'm gonna talk to these people. I'm gonna practice these martial arts. This game is going to actually have a slow pace. Like it's gonna make sense that it takes this amount of time to do this. And as a fan, who like kickstarted, like I'm completely understanding of the budgetary limitations.
Yeah, yeah.
There are some things that I'd change, but overall, I mean, clearly it's my favorite game of the year. I guess the main disappointment is if this came out in 2017, would it be my game of the year? Or would it be my runner-up? And that's a doozy for me to think about because this should be my de facto game of the year.
Well. You know, unless it comes out in the same year as Vanquish 2 or something, you know.
I think you think I like Vanquish more than I do. I like Vanquish a lot, but... But I'm talking about Nier Automata here, which is probably my favorite Platinum game.
Yep.
Like, if it came up against Nier Automata, would Shenmue 3 be my, like, runner-up? It's a weird position to be in. But at the same time, like... Simple fact is, like, I keep on wanting to be playing it. Like, I wish I was playing it right now. If I was not in a relationship, I promise you I would have finished it. I would have played it at my own pace.
Also, it's nice, I guess, that we're in a position in the games industry where a game like Shenmue can exist. Like,
it's so awesome that it exists.
It's, like, for a long time, it felt like it was so hard for a game to get made that only sure bets got made. But I feel like now, the last couple of years, especially with not just with Kickstarter, but with publishers like Devolver and First Blood and things like that, there's more risks and there's more variety being.
I wonder if that's a positive side effect of like just bigger corporations like kind of tightening up that like the other people are like, we're happy to make money. We don't have to make all the money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But we just want to be profitable and sustainable.
It feels like there's more of that.
Where the hunger is.
And you've got the options. You know, Devolver are putting 2D beat-em-ups out or you know, top-down shooters.
Street Fighter 4 is coming out next year, I think.
You know, and weird, wonderful things that, you know, are very niche. But there's obviously an audience for them. There's people that like these oddities in gaming. They don't have to be the next Tom Clancy fucking whatever.
I think
that
Shenmue's the greatest game ever, and that's a fucking niche. It's just a weird one that weirdly is.
Yeah, and it's a great place to be, I think. And I worry when the new consoles come out whether we regress and lose that or whether it's something that's now kind of built in.
I'm going to choose to believe recent political events have really left my faith in humanity a little bit shaken, but I think the simple fact that like pixel art is now like a widely accepted style and like something like say even Stardew Valley will not do Call of Duty numbers, but it will do mega numbers if it's good. That game could have run on a PS3, no problem.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Next gen hardware to run.
Yeah.
So I do think there's a good chance that stuff will actually carry over next gen. I've also got my train of thought back. So back to the whole interview with the Suzuki's English voice actor is, I think the point is there, like where they're finding, staying true to Shenmue as it was and Shenmue the vision, it sometimes get muddled. So once I played enough of it, I was like, okay, I'm going to watch some other people playing this and see how they react. Because I was playing in Japanese, and it also helps that Japanese is a language that can leave sentences hanging a lot more than English can.
Yep.
That works to the way the dialogue works in this. I do wish the way the dialogue had worked had been developed more, but it still works. not perfectly, but better in Japanese. And then I watched that. The English voice acting is bad. It's straight up bad. And it's, and from what I can tell, it's intentionally bad. It's like, oh, this is what the fans remember. I'm like, you need to draw the line there. It's like, yeah, like, fans will forgive it because it's nostalgic. The same way, oh, like, okay, the engine's struggling, they don't have the budget, people are fading into view. That happened in the original game, that's cute. You know what? I would have preferred it if people hadn't faded into view, though, and I'm sure nobody wanted bad voice acting.
Well, we you go back to Yakuza again. Who picks the English dubs? Like, Judgment gives you Judgment, there is a fully English... and the first thing I did was pick the Japanese. There's no way I'm taking the English version of that. Half the charm of that series, and you know, Judgment isn't technically Yakuza, but it's
close
enough. Oh, the
Japanese version actually has Ryuga Gotoku. I can't even speak anymore. Written on the box, like, it literally has a little stamp saying this is the same world.
Yeah, and it's fantastic. You know, I don't speak a word of Japanese, but it just works with the game better. You know, the way intonation and tone and flow of conversation just works better in the native language.
Mechanically, Japanese is actually kind of useful for games. I mean, Shenmue's taking place in China at this point, so it's weird that everybody is speaking Japanese. I mean, 18-year-old me was able to be a little bit racist and think, well, I can pretend it's an Asian language, so it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I understand, whatever. I still think it's great. Like, the world is beautiful. Like, it is uniquely paced. It is very unfortunate in its release date. Like, being... So, I guess for younger people, like, it's hard to grasp this, but Yu Suzuki was the shit in the 90s.
Mm.
Like, he was as household a name as a game developer got in that era. Which is not very household, but, like, by that standard, he was way up there. And this super slow-paced game, which, again, like, I would suggest you walk through, you don't run, like, it's best enjoyed at a relaxed pace. Coming out off the back of Death Stranding, also by a auteur creator, a very slow-paced game, except this one has a budget of, like, $100 million or fucking something.
Yeah, it had a blank check, yeah.
Really, really unfortunate timing. Like, you could not think of a worse game. Like, because they're not the same, but it's a similar itch.
Yep.
And I could not blame a single person for choosing Death Stranding instead.
Yeah.
But Shenmue 3 is really good, and I think it's now being discounted to a price that I could recommend people who are not Shenmue fans necessarily to actually
try it.
I think it's like 40% off or something, the like launch price on Amazon, which is probably where I should have started. So if anything that I've said aside from the negative stuff sounds appealing to you, please give Shenmue a shot. Like, despite I've like been in a headspace for an article where I actually have to think about the negative stuff, and I think that's hurting, but the fact of the matter is it is like a uniquely relaxed paced game that, like, it doesn't just hit the action scenes, and the fact that, like, it contains a life in between, and that's, like, really important to me. Like, it makes everything feel more real when it actually happens.
Yep.
And this is a less refined, less finished version of that, but it is still...
That.
Really, really is still my favorite game that I've played this year. Like, without question. And Fire Emblem really was amazing. Nothing against Fire Emblem. That game was great. Wow, we've hit everything.
We have.
I've praised and ragged on Shenmue 3. That's not something I was intentionally planning to do. At least I sound balanced, I guess.
It's fair, and you haven't
fair
been bought
by... Fair and
balanced.
That's going to be our news motto.
You haven't been bought by Mountain Dew and Doritos. So...
No, we're going to be... But if the people who brew Sammy Claus would like to...
we're open
Castle
to collaborations. We are open to collaborations. I'm looking for Thermoskin at the moment, you know. So
or a Plantation or some really good rum provider. Mm. Provider is probably not the right word for rum. Distiller.
Hidden Loot's my favourite, but I don't think we have much of a listener base in Panama, so...
But if we Dude, Nabble's proof the shit out of that.
Absolutely, yeah. Aya can be bought.
For the right product at the right price.
Yes.
You know, let's go out on that. So I'm just going to get bought out on good Christmas beer. Houston is going to get bought out by Panamint Rum.
Yep.
Sean, what is your compromise price? This is how we're going to wrap this show up, by like selling out.
What is your buying price? It's Pepsi Max, isn't it?
No. Give me nerd tattoos.
Nerd tattoos. Yep.
That's it. That's my price. That shit's expensive, man.
I had a brief moment where I thought Pepsi Max is really good. Actually, I'm going to tell the story after we like actually wrap this up properly. Sean, where can we find you on the Twitters? Have you got any articles coming? Anything is
spook. Yes, you can find me on the Twitters at @Nichols_Sean. Nothing coming at the moment. I really should get around
to it. No, something's coming to, this time of the year.
Yeah, yeah, it's a bit rough this time of year. Not even your arsehole editor expects anything this time of year.
You kind of put the game of the year shit out and then you just take a couple of weeks off.
Yeah.
Yeah, work on last year's backlog. Get ready for the new year in time for Cyberpunk next year. So yes, there's nothing coming for me.
Or
at
this
the
year, we could be going live in 2019.
Yeah, this is not getting up till January, guys. So yeah, because right, editor wants
so
a holiday.
So you got anything you do wish to pimp?
Oh, we've got our Game of the Year award stuff up now. You know,
everything
read that.
But a Game of the Year.
Yeah, we don't really like to put a label on things, you know, personal favorites only. And we'll have all our usual guff up on Player 2 and a new year of fun and frivolity as we do things. Look, at this point, if you like our stuff, you like it. If you don't, well, you're not listening to this podcast, so.
I don't know, like, there are some podcasts I listen to that I don't really visit the website for, so maybe worth saying why you should.
Well, yes, you know, we do our own thing.
If you want to like read something that's less drunken and thought out, that's buried there somewhere.
It is, and I actually put my thoughts down as to why Jedi Fallen Order actually is better than Dark Souls. A little bit, but it's alright.
A little bit better than Dark Souls, and a little bit drunk.
Mm.
Yeah,
just
and I guess
on occasion,
personal pimping. I am at Pretendbeard on Twitter. I am not always drunk. My tweets are sometimes unhinged, but for different reasons. If I'm there, and back to why I thought Pepsi Max was amazing for a moment. I had to figure this out about 2 months ago at Costco of all fucking places. So you get that garbage ass hot dog, which frankly, if you put enough sauce on it, it's fine.
Yep.
And it's like, what works out in Japan is like $2, including a bottomless drink.
Yep.
Well, I'm not going to call it boutique food, but the value is there.
Well, that is Costco's brand, you know.
Yeah.
Quality, quantity.
Actually.